from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you are listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper.
Good to be here.
Why do you say that?
Because this is one of my favorite parts of the week.
Oh, I love to be here.
I love to be here with my friends.
Here's what we got going on. So there has been, there was like a contest. Maybe the right contest, right way to talk about it. There was a group of atheists who wanted to come up with basically 10 better commandments, or new 10 commandments, okay? So there was a 10 non-commandments contest in which atheists were asked to offer modern alternatives to the current 10 commandments, the biblical 10 commandments. And to sweeten the pot, the contest offered $10,000 in cash to the winning would-be Moses. Hmm. Okay, so we're going to go through those tonight, and I kind of want to talk through those. It's like, what are they... I don't know. Are there some that we can agree to, mm-hmm. Not as a replacement, but like, okay, yeah, we can dig on that. Mm-hmm. What's potentially problematic about these particular commandments, and as far as someone trying to live their life according to them? Okay, so we're gonna hit those are the ten new commandments. Also, it was a couple weeks ago that Pope Francis had reportedly said that there's room in heaven for all God's creatures. And it came out that he didn't say that, but there was a lot of news going back and forth about dogs going to heaven, the presence of animals in heaven. And so this is a question that comes up from time to time, and so I thought we'd give it a round and see what the general thought is on how likely it is we'll see Fido jumping around or in the streets of gold. Mm-hmm. Also, we got some Pope-style advice. There is some advice on Dear Life and the Path. People still got troubles in the world, and we're... We're late night internet radio who is here to help. And we're also going to be pondering continually what is it that Jesus is saying. Herrick, give me a heads up on what we got going on tonight with that.
All right. Well, it seems like tonight Jesus is telling us that we're blessed, and he's also saying that people are going to hate you. So we'll go into more depth on that one later.
Boy, that seems like rough times, Booba.
It really does. I don't know what to think about that just yet. I'm excited to hear what Jesus is fully saying.
Okay. All right. I think that sounds right. All right. Here we go. Let's talk about this Fido business. So the way the story was is that there was a kid that was upset, and the Pope was nearby, and that the Pope Francis had gone by him and said paradise is open to all of God's creatures, and he had said that to the distraught boy whose dog had died. Now there were some follow up news stories that basically said someone had said that in the past, but it wasn't him, and it wasn't in this circumstances. He didn't really say it. But it does bring into question, how we should think about animals and heaven. So, Booba, what is your first reaction? A small child comes in and says, hey, Booba, I've just lost my puppy. Help me understand more about dogs in heaven.
You're making me say this directly to the child, really?
Well, yeah, that's who's going to ask the question.
All right, fine. I don't think that heaven is for dogs. I don't see it. I mean, everything you see in the Bible has nothing to do with the animals and them having everlasting life or even a soul.
You mean with God's creation?
For that matter, excuse me. I really don't see it happening. It doesn't really matter to me, but from what I've seen and what I've read and what I've understood, it's not for animals.
So when it says all creation will... bow down because Jesus Christ is Lord, you're just discounting the rest of creation besides you?
I don't think that means
you're a pretty self-important dude, Booba.
I am, and we've all determined that over the past couple of years, but I don't see that that the animals are there in heaven. No.
What about the assortment of creatures mentioned in Revelation that are there praising and worshiping God?
The assortment of creatures praising God in Revelation. So the four, like, beings... Are you talking
they're
about those?
Like four beasts that yeah. You know, are there. They're in the throne room. They're praising God.
I guess I don't really know that represents like beasts as in like my dog Fido. I just don't see how those equate all of animals in all of existence go to heaven.
Well, maybe I could just read the Bible and decide whatever I want.
Fair enough. That sounds like a good decision.
I guess I'm the new Noah.
So then let me ask you this from a counter perspective. You take the animals or the all of God's creation as there are animals in heaven?
Yeah, I'm just saying that I would say probably, yeah. I mean, it says he clothes the lilies of the field. You know what I'm saying? Like, he made the stuff. I feel like it's not just a use once and toss. It's not okay. A gas station visit. It's a creation. There's integrity in it, and it's made to last the ages.
Okay.
That means that I'm going to go up there, and there very well be a buffalo with trays on their back serving stuff. I don't know what's going to happen.
Are they going to be McDoubles?
That's Mike's vision of a restored creation is a buffalo with a tray on his back?
Right now, he's a wild, crazy beast that can't be dealt with. The Lord will redeem him to be a tray server.
When he was created and it was good, he was serving man with a tray on his back.
He may be serving the Lord. I don't know. I'm just saying that, like, I don't think there's enough language in the Bible to say that, like, for sure either way. Like, I get it. They don't have souls, blah, blah, blah. They don't need redemption against their sinful ways. But they are part of the Lord's creation. And if heaven comes down, then it stays as it is.
Okay, I can see that. I still think they're not there.
Well, I feel like I've produced a lot of stuff to back mine up, and you've said nothing.
I feel like I covered everything that I need to cover.
That sounds right. That yeah. I would agree that Buva has produced everything he could produce to defend in his own defense.
That's probably a valid point. Let me tell you the amount of time I've spent on whether or not Fido's in heaven. About the amount of time that we've been talking about it here.
Well,
I
that
do not
stuns
care.
Me why you've talked so long.
I don't care. I just do not care. I don't see the point.
I have no idea. Let me prattle for a bit about it. I'm inclined to agree. He created these things. He said it was good. At the restoration of all things, I believe they will be around. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be inclined to say they're probably in the new earth. The new heaven.
Maybe perhaps not the heaven, the interim. Okay. I can get on board with that. Mm-hmm. All right, then. Boobie, you look like a real boob there.
I'm all right with that.
I miss the first part? Was there some small child that tugged you on the shirt and asked you these things?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and Boobie basically said no.
Yeah. I looked right in Johnny's face and I said, shut up, your dog's fine.
He refused.
Get a new dog. Guess what? They're free for half the world.
I said turn or burn, not turn, lay down and burn.
I didn't say roll over and burn,
hey,
Fido.
Here's the deal. Like, I mean, sometimes I wish for Booba's perspective because there's been a dog or two that I've owned that I would prefer. I mean, if he come running up to me when I get up to heaven, I'll be like, dang it.
That frickin' dog's here?
Now I understand redemption.
That's right. I'll get a brand new white robe and he'll pee on it directly.
The Holy Spirit has decided to show you what mercy is when he sends a stupid dog your way when you get up to heaven.
You are redeemed, but still stay humble. Dog pee on you. Great. Thank you.
Welcome to heaven. Here's Fido.
The Lord is funny, just like I thought.
He missed you for the past 40 years that you haven't missed him.
Guess what, Mike? Guess what? New creation.
Here. Here's that bit I put in Revelation.
He didn't mean literal lion. He meant me. all right. So there was a contest by a group of atheists to try to create a 10 non-commandments, the 10 non-commandments contest, and they were to offer modern alternatives to the 10 commandments in the Bible. And so there were a bunch of submissions, 2,800 submissions from 18 countries and 27 U.S. states, which is interesting to me. Like, half the states participated. You couldn't scrounge up an atheist in Delaware to submit something?
I'm more interested in the only 18 countries. That's a tenth of them.
No, that's true. That's not
it's
a wide.
Less than a tenth. Yeah,
but I mean, that's the thing with atheists. Like, they hold a very small margin. Like, it's not just hey, we don't buy into Christianity. You're also saying you don't buy into Islamic religions either, right? Now you're really outnumbered. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, there's more people on this earth that believe in a single God than not.
No, that's true. Yeah, by quite a bit.
Yeah, by quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, here were the 10. There was a team of guys, 13 fellas. Judges who selected 10 serious submissions, and these were the winners for the 10 non-commandments. So what I want to do is kind of, can we get on board with any of these? Not to replace our commandment, the legit 10 commandments, but like, you know, can we agree with any of this? And what's problematic about them? All right, so here we go. Number one, 10 non-commandments chosen by the winners. Number one, be open-minded and be willing to alter your beliefs with new evidence.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly endorse that.
Yeah,
I feel like you can. There's a bit about that at the tail end of James 3, if I recall.
Yeah,
about having some conversations and being peaceful and open to reason. And I feel like James addresses that, and it's done and done.
Yeah.
So far, we're in with number one.
Okay.
Come, friends. Number two, strive to understand what is most likely to be true, not to believe what you wish to be true.
I agree.
Yeah, I can agree with
yeah,
that.
So far yeah. we're 2 for 2 on the non-commandments.
Let's take an objective approach instead of...
Great yeah. job, 18 countries and 27 states.
Hey, things are rolling. number 3. The scientific method is the most reliable way of understanding the natural world.
If you would agree that that's also true in the 15th century, 16th century, 17th century, like if you're going to say that, then you have to agree that that was true at whatever point in time a man lived, of which the theories swayed wildly. I would have to say 75% agree.
Mike's partially in.
I feel like the scientific method can certainly prove the way God has done something, but any alteration to that, I feel like, is a bit wrong.
I would agree with Mike. It has some limitations. Like it requires repeatability, so it can't really explain a singular phenomenon. If you can't reproduce it in a laboratory setting or some kind of an environment and show that it happens over and over again, you're kind of hosed. So
you're saying we could agree that it's reliable in the field that it plays
yes.
in, but it is the field that it's able to play in is limited by the basic nature of what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like when the apple fell from the tree, that story, that instead of saying, hey, I think there's a pull within the earth that's causing this, I would say, apples love ground. And it doesn't matter how many times that I take an apple or where I take it to, it seeks ground and gets there. And I could have stood on that principle for the last 200-300 years.
It loves the ground even more in the fall.
And I could have proved it. I could have proved it repeatedly, and I could have said, yes, this is absolutely the case.
All right.
Yeah.
So we're partial in for number 3. Here we go. Number 4. Every person has the right to control of their body. That's an interesting one, given the number of people in prisons. Have you ever shackled a man to take him into jail? Because I feel like you just denied him that.
Yeah.
So, no.
Yeah, disagree.
They're against incarceration in any form.
I mean,
not atheism, that's anarchy.
It could be an if-then-when. It's like he had control of his body not to commit the crime, and he chose to, and then therefore we've taken that away from him.
It doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like it's an at all times.
No, I'm a solid no then.
Yeah, I that can't even pass a basic sniff test.
Hey, my kid walks towards an outlet with a fork. I feel like it's time for me to take control of the kid.
Don't push my rights, Dad. Yeah.
You don't own me.
Don't tread on me.
yeah, that one certainly has limitations. I think that's an attempt to solve what is a social problem mm-hmm. with a very large swath that I don't think is tenable in a natural society.
Yeah, and I wouldn't use the word tenable there. Because I'm not sure of its definition.
It's not attainable.
That's fair enough.
It can't actually be pulled off.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Number 5. God is not necessary to be a good person or to live a full and meaningful life.
To be a good person, fulfill a meaningful life.
A full and meaningful life.
You know, I suppose if you provided the definitions of all three of those things, characteristics, and... I suppose that could be true. My definition of what is a full and meaningful life may be different than... I think that's a perspective issue.
I think the operative question here is they've inferred some things that otherwise not provided guidance on how to infer, such as what makes something good, right? If God is not necessary to be a good person, mm-hmm. what is good? And how do you know what good is? Especially if you're leaving every person the right to control their body and you disagree on what's good.
Yeah.
I feel like you might be looking at a shiv.
Yeah, you know what's good for me? Bare naked taxi driving. That's what's good for me. You know who else disagrees? Everybody. Yeah, get out of the taxi.
And so, as a matter of fact, all three of those quantifiers, good person, full life, meaningful life, mm-hmm. Because we don't have a way to otherwise gauge what is good, what is full, and what is a meaningful life, this may be a problematic outcome.
Yeah.
As a commandment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I can live by that.
It would leave it's essentially a non-theistic answer to all of those. So what's your life purpose? You can just make up your own life purpose.
I wish to kill people.
Well, then you can...
My life shall have meaning as I kill folk.
Yeah.
Murder.
Yeah, and...
No, I mean, granted, that, like, that's the extreme nature of... But,
well, I mean,
it is evident... go ahead.
Say, you know, your goal in life is to do what's best for you. That doesn't inherently mean that that is not to the detriment of someone else, right?
That's the nature of rape, is it not?
Right. You like, hey, this is what's best for me. I will do what's best for me. Well, I mean, that brand of thinking has brought innumerable amount of corporate scandals, let alone crime. But on the other hand, if you live a life where you say, I will do what's best for others, the only one that actually tends to get taken down a notch is your kingdom. Not even necessarily you, but just the kingdom you were attempting to build.
So, that one I'm going to say is tricky. When I say God is not necessary to be a good person to live a full and meaningful life, I'm more likely to I don't know, argue with the definitions of good, full, and meaningful, and the disparities between people on those things that I think it makes that on its on its face problematic.
I think to be an atheistic list, though, you kind of need a statement like this.
No, that's true.
You do, but like, I mean, isn't this showing the dirty laundry in your wardrobe, right? Because, like, of the things that are problematic about... even if you ignore Christianity and you say any type of system that revolves around a higher authority that passes morality on and say it is the authority that determines what is good and what is not good, this is actually the dirty laundry in the wardrobe that says this cannot be reconciled because it is subjective at every level and thus will always be in confrontation. So it's questionable as a commandment. I mean, there's honesty to it that says this is what we think, but it is problematic about how it plays out.
Yeah.
All right, number six, be mindful of the consequences of all your actions and recognize that you must take responsibility for them.
Hmm. Yeah, that sounds about right.
So small children aren't allowed in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe me and Boova agree too early. Hey, Herrick, speak first, and me and Boova will talk in a second.
So that's a weird... It's a weird commandment to say, be mindful of the consequences.
Yeah, it would be nice if everyone in the society played by that rules, but obviously small children would have to be trained in that.
Right.
So in that sense, we can at least agree with them on it. I'm for it. I agree. I wish that everyone could, but I'm also willing to accept people who are incapable of that.
It's also a bit intangible, is it not? Like, being mindful of consequences and recognizing that you should take responsibility for them are both they're cognitive things. I was aware.
Yeah.
And
so if you've had brain damage, you're out.
You're out. Or if you're just at the root nature, if you are not a good person and are aware of consequences, but continue down the path anyway, like, this doesn't negate any type of that behavior.
Right.
Like, all we're just saying is, do I recognize this is socially unacceptable and this will harm other people? Yes, I do. Do I recognize that I should take responsibility for that? Yes, but it is detrimental to me, so I refuse.
Yeah, but hold on. To be fair, like, we take our Ten Commandments as a package and say these things followed in a whole should produce X. And, like, so it is slightly unfair to pick one of their commandments, and you know, apart from what they're coupled with, and pick it one by one. You know what I'm saying? Like it'd be like looking at God's Ten Commandments and saying, you know, do not commit adultery.
Yes.
And if you nail that, then everything should be fine, except for the other nine that you're ignoring.
No. I think what I was saying is like, with everything else they've pointed out, this still isn't solved that, right? Like that is the rolling issue. It existed in six. It exists in five. Like it actually is a compilation. Like all those things are pointing to something that still is a problem.
I'm not saying you're not making sense. I'm just saying you're not making sense to me.
I think that's fair.
Okay.
As a commandment, these seem to be things that do I understand consequences and do I recognize that I must take responsibility for them? I mean, those are things that happen in your head but don't necessarily influence ultimately how you behave, and which makes it, like a weaker commandment.
Yeah,
relative to
people,
don't do this thing.
People could be completely mindful of the consequences and say, look, if I do this, I will gain a promotion. This other man will get fired unjustly. I'm going to do that anyway. That does not produce a good.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Correct. Because there are people that do that all the time, right? And like death row guys will say, yes, I knew what I was doing. And they still did it. They still ended up doing that. And so like that is in a base nature isn't a very good way to evaluate good, not good. Here we go. Number.
Wait, so what are we at? What? How many have we agreed with so far?
That was six. We were on with the first two, open-minded and willing to alter your beliefs with new evidence. Yes. Strive to understand what is most likely to be true, not to believe what you wish to be true. Agreed. Scientific method is the most reliable way of understanding the natural world within its playing field. We generally agree with that. Mm-hmm. Every person has the right to control of their own body. There are problems with that one. God is not necessary to be a good person or to live a full and meaningful life. That is very dependent and contingent on your definitions of good, full, and meaningful. Mm-hmm. You can easily drop God from that if you define all three of those things without him. If you define it with him, obviously that's an issue. Mm-hmm. Be mindful of the consequences of all your actions and recognize that you must take responsibility for them. At least me, I take that as an issue for me because that is not a tenable do, don't do. That is simply, am I aware? And people can be aware and still do things. and still do the wrong thing. So, like, that's not much of a guide. It's not much of a commandment. It's just a, I don't know.
Yeah, it also kind of undermines the social fabric when you have people who are specialized in one role, and so they will do that really well. They may not fold their sheets very well, but, you know, they can swing a baseball bat. So they'll hire someone to fold their sheets for them. Are they taking responsibility, or are they just passing it off on someone else?
Yeah.
So there's a whole gray area involved in what does personal responsibility look like that I don't know any way to really flesh that one out and actually enforce or even look for and evaluate that.
It would be,
so
yeah.
It's a nice ideal, but how that works.
How well does it guide behavior or produce? Because that's probably the big question here is to be fair to the list. The question mm-hmm. would be, what does it produce to all 10 together? Does it produce a functioning member of society that mm-hmm. atheism would look at and say, that's a success for a life? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where these become, like, obviously there's gray areas, even from a faith perspective, where you're like, you're wrestling with those things. But I think functionally, are we producing good people? Like, if that doesn't do this, what is the purpose of the list? What does it actually produce?
Okay.
All right, here we go. Number 7, treat others as you would want them to treat you, and you can reasonably expect them to want to be treated. Think about their perspective.
That they just plagiarized Jesus on that one.
It's that's a Jesus theft.
Jesus theft.
Let's
so I agree with him on that. Yeah.
So,
well meant.
But they did alter this a little bit. So mm-hmm. let's look at the alteration.
And you can expect.
Treat others as you would want them to treat you, and can reasonably expect them to want to be treated.
Okay.
Think about their perspective.
So I mean, are they creating a caveat for the guy that likes to get punched in the face or something? And he's saying, I like getting punched in the face. I'm going to return the favor to my local friend.
Or the flip side of, I expect you to give me $1,000 every time we interact. And
right.
That's not reasonable, so therefore I don't have to treat them the way they want to.
That's right. I would sure like to receive $1,000.
Exactly.
Yeah. It seems like they took this statement and reduced brevity, but instead tried to tailor it more towards whoever it is that is on the other side.
I'm going to give you a perfect example. So I was talking to a fellow at work today, and his brother-in-law is a genius, and here's why. So the man, for Christmas, here's what he's done. Everybody asked him what he wanted for Christmas, and he says, I collect silver coins. And like, so here's the genius move of this guy, right? It's like, I wish I had to come up with this, right? But for every Christmas, he's like, they ask him what he wants, and he always says, I collect silver coins. Silver coins are outrageously expensive, and if you want to get the man what he wants, you have to buy him this extremely expensive thing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so I thought, this is extremely foolish of me, because I should have told everybody that I collect $100 bills. Like, what is your passion? I collect $100 bills. And so, like, every Christmas, I know I would be at least getting $100 from somebody. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
That's a genius move. Everyone's like, well, don't worry, don't get me nothing, or you can buy my kids something, but don't worry. He's like, yeah, I collect silver coins. So, you know, if you really wanted to give me something, you could buy me a really expensive silver coin. And he left no caveat as to get him anything else. I thought, that's genius. He's done it. You know what I'm saying? He's figured out this life, and he basically claims to collect something very expensive, and that's the only way you can make him happy is to buy it for him.
That's pretty sharp.
Yeah, no doubt.
Pretty sharp.
I think he just won the materialism game.
Yeah, he did. Anyway, just for you guys, just for a heads up, I collect $100 bills.
I think that's fair.
So,
hey, you only need to know one people pleaser to make that worth it.
Yeah. That ain't no doubt.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Number 8. We have the responsibility to consider others, including future generations.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we're on board with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
No problems there.
Number 9. There is no one right way to live.
I agree.
Yeah, okay. I only agreed because Eric did. I did. I was about to disagree.
Boova's mulling it over. What's up, Boova?
I'm just trying to, I don't know. I'm trying to think about that to its end of there's not one right way to live. Yeah. Okay.
Would God be upset at you if you were not an Olympic swimmer? Which
that's
you currently
what I'm trying
are not?
To say. Is one right way to live? Are you saying like life path? Like it's okay for one person to be, you know, an Olympic swimmer and one person to be, you know, over here working on cars and one person to be over here. Yes, obviously that's okay, but one right way to live, I'm looking at from the perspective of we believe in one path that is the way to live, which is, you know, believing that in God and believing that Jesus is the Son of God and is our Savior and all the good stuff. I would say that is the one right way to live, but from the perspective of, yeah, you can be a mechanic or you can be a dolphin tamer, whatever. So I'm trying to figure out
Dolphins need taming?
I'll tell you what, there's a rogue gang of them off Key West. There's only one man that ventures out there.
I had no idea.
They get crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is so generic that it's not helpful, but yeah, right. There's no one right way to live. Okay, yeah. Okay. Number 10, leave the world a better place than you found it.
I like that.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean,
Mike,
what was that, Mike?
Unnecessary.
Well, I feel like it falls in the same caveat as the happy and the whatever. Like, it depends on what your definition of better is. If Weeping Prophet showed up, made everybody mad, and everyone's upset at him, you know, did he leave the place better? Did Jeremiah leave the place better than it was when he got there? Well, no, everybody's mad at him. Everybody's upset. Everyone's afraid of the Lord. Everyone thinks that they're on the wrong side of this thing. But the truth of the matter is, they are, and they are, and they are. You know what I'm saying?
I was going to say, that's kind of subjective. That's a good point. I may want the world to be more of a desert rather than a really, really rainforested area, and that means I'm cutting down trees versus someone else that's really excited.
Yeah, you know how I leave this world better? By taking your land and giving it to me. That's what I think.
It's a much better place because I'm richer. Woohoo!
That's it. Yeah, see, and
I'm thinking of future generations because my kids now have more money.
This is where this all boils down to, really, is the source of why you do what you do. You know, and like, when you put it into categories as broad as that can insert an opinion, like if it's better or it's good or whatever, like my definition is got to be different than yours, right? Like I think I know what's better to do with my paycheck than you do,
yeah,
than the guy next to me, you know, because I am surrounded by it. But like, you know, I'm guaranteeing I can find 20 guys on the street right now that think it would be better spent on them than it would be on where I'm currently spending it. And they may be right in some aspects, they may be wrong in others, you know? So when you say better or good, and then have some kind of lofty idea that all humanity has an innate sense of good, like, you know that's not true. How many people have you met?
Yeah.
I mean, I had this conversation with a guy a couple years ago. I was we were talking about Jesus feeding the 5,000, feeding with the fishes and the loaves, right? And he says, I really don't think that, you know, that he reproduced the food or whatever. And I said, well, what do you think happened? And he thought, well, you know, I believe in the good of people. I feel like they had enough food there and they shared it. I said, how many people have you met? Like, in your life, you're 30 years old. How many people you met you think the good of humanity? People will stab you in the face. I mean, looking at you, smiling, you telling you they're your best friend.
You know what I think is funny? I like the people who are willing to, like, argue with the details like that, but not reject the story altogether. Like, I would be way more likely to say, yeah, that didn't happen, than I am to say, it did happen, but, you know, they shared food. Or it did happen, and Jesus swooned, as opposed to the fact that, like, no, it just didn't occur. Like, I'm way more likely to say that. Maybe that's you know, the respite for the feeble-minded. But, like, why would you accept 90% of the story and then quibble over the details like some guy went to the purpose of drawing that stuff up? I don't get it.
No, that's true.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a basket, though. The Bible lies. man,
wasn't actually a boy's lunch.
That's right. He wasn't a boy. He was 15. Jews didn't consider that guy a boy. Lies. Yeah.
It was a boy's dinner.
Jesus didn't really die. He hid behind a cave for a while, and he's like, ta-da! You know?
I'm here.
Yeah, that's probably what happened. Absolutely. A ruse. A giant ruse. Not only a giant ruse, but a childish ruse to boot. Like, the type of behavior you're suggesting has to happen for these falsities. You know what I'm saying? Jesus literally has to, like, hide behind a guy, sneak out of the crowd, change his clothes, shave his beard. You know what I'm saying? Hide out for 3 days and be like, I think it's time. And then he jumps out like a birthday cake, man. You know what I'm saying? Hey, I was just teasing.
Fellas.
What's up?
I've swooned. Tell no one.
I just...
Half his ministry trying to set up all the miracles.
Exactly.
Like, all right, here's the deal. You're going to bring out this kind of sick dude through the roof.
That's right.
And he's going to come down. I'm going to look at him. He's going to be great.
Chuck, we're going to use your roof.
That's right. And I got the roof on a quick release hatch. So,
exactly.
So James, you pull on his rope, right? And the hatch will open, and they will send down Stephen, who's really okay, but he's going to act real sick.
Hey, pretend like you're really, really sick. Even dead. That'd be great. Just lay there for a couple days.
That's right.
Don't really move.
Lazarus, I want you to go in this cave for like 3 days, man. Don't come out of there. And I need you to stinketh.
Yeah.
Because if you don't stinketh, they're not going to buy it.
But we need a volunteer for the crucifixion.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Who's going to take one for the team?
Yeah, exactly. Now listen, there's odds are they may hurt you a little, but it'll probably be fine.
It's gonna hurt.
This is not what I signed up for.
I'm not going to lie. It's going to hurt a lot.
It's a guaranteed swoon.
It's just ridiculous. Seriously.
Somebody get my clothes from that guy.
All right.
He He'd had to stab himself in the hands. It's ridiculous.
I'm just saying, like, there's a weird subset of people that want to argue with Christianity that want to buy the story as true, except for quibbles of details. And I don't get it. Like, you're fighting over things that nobody can prove, but you're not rejecting the big, hey, 4,000 people ate in the middle of the desert. Well, 4,000 men ate in the middle of the desert. Double that, at least. And you want to say, well, Jesus didn't feed them, though. They just had that much food around, because I believe in people. But otherwise, the Bible's acceptable to tell that story, except if they made up that Jesus part.
Yeah.
What is it?
You know what's funny? Like, if you play this out to its end, like, you know, there's a broad base of the kingdom of God that has the same problem with, you know, Christ's promises, where he says, sin is done, I've taken care of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, how many times can you say that story's true, and I know Christ died for my sins, but, like, that one that you're really bad at, you know, you let it separate you from him because you're not really buying that it's done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, it's true in a comical level, but it's true on a serious level, too. Like we put Christ in a perspective, like, he died for everybody's sins, and that's great, but that one that I'm having a real hard time with and makes me feel like a jerk, there's no way he's on board with that. I'm just going to stay away from him for a while and hope he cools down about it.
That's actually, I usually have to frame things that way when I know that I'm not thinking right, but I can't seem to let something go, or I'm fighting from my perspective, not God's. I usually have to frame it as, are you calling God a liar? Does God tell lies? Because if God doesn't tell lies, then that's forgiven. And if God doesn't tell lies, then there's mercy and there's justice and there's whatever. And like, if I frame it like that, like, I'm not so bold as to call God a liar. So that is usually what shakes something out from them that I refuse to get rid of, is I have to frame it as, let everyone else be a liar. God tells the truth. And that includes me. And that usually shakes that stuff right out. All right. So anyway, that was the atheist 10 commandments, the non-commandments.
I feel like we could talk for like 15 minutes before it went south. Like, if, you know, if we had some atheist friends come in.
Yeah. So like, none of the, like, except for the fact that they mentioned God in number 5 and said he's not necessary to be a good person or live a full and meaningful life. I think there's three takeaways for me. One, I don't know. There's a lot that's objectionable here. I mean, I get it. I think that's all right. The second problem, or the second thing would be, you have some subjectivity issues, right? Like, you're trying to guard behavior without dictating behavior. You're trying to say, we want to produce a certain type of person without saying this is the type of person we want to produce. It's just, can we agree that we produce people? And so, like, subjective things like what is good, what is full, what is meaningful, what is better, what is right, those are all problems with the way this is. And again, you could say that, I think the accusation would be, is that that type of fixed determination is the plot for the feeble-minded, right? Where I have to be told what's right and wrong. I'm not able to come to that on my own. But the truth is like, human behavior should bear out. In fact, I feel like scientific method would otherwise do this for you. Human behavior will bear out that people do not gravitate towards the same morals of right and wrong.
No.
And that's why we enter societies, even ones that we're trying to help, and we feel like it's atrocious how people behave. Their moral guidelines are just different. And so if you're, you know, that type of variability, you're just going to have to accept some things that you find morally objectionable. And it becomes problematic, I think, from a grounded moral belief.
Yeah, people are more likely to pick a moral system that best fits the lifestyle they want to live.
Yeah.
And they end up with competing morals, competing fundamental values. And so they end up stepping on each other's toes. And even if their values were entirely aligned, they give each other liberties that they wouldn't normally give to others.
Right.
And so whatever your values are, they ultimately are going to come back to bite you.
Exactly. Exactly. And some of that, you know, when they say be mindful of the consequences of all your actions and recognize that you must take responsibility for them, even that word responsibility is rooted in the fact that there's an arbiter that says this is a bad thing and you are responsible, as opposed to, you know, I feel like doing such and such. There was an action to it. But like, it's not my issue. I'm not responsible for that, because that's just the way the world works. And so that inherent disagreement, and I'm with you. So like, if I wasn't a Christian, like, and was trying to formulate something, I'm not saying that this is an easy task. I think this is extremely difficult. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm with you, atheist fellows, like, trying to come up with this. Like, my critiques are not meant to be mean-spirited, right? I'm just saying, like, I feel like you're up against a very difficult thing that I can easily solve with God. If you take that out of the picture, that's a hard task, and I sympathize. I think it's wrong, but like, I sympathize with you trying to do that. It's just very difficult with what human nature is. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. All right. Speaking of difficult stuff, Dave Herrick, what does Jesus say?
What's Jesus talking about? All right. So we've got a a statement from Jesus. It was actually in his first speech that he gives. And he fires off his first speech with eight, hey, blessed are, and then he'll describe a type of person and why they're blessed. And then he gets to a ninth one, and he says, blessed are you when others revile you, persecute you, utter all kinds of evil against you, and falsely on my account. So what's Jesus talking about? I've got a couple of maybe questions to sort of help digest this one, perhaps.
Can
so,
you read that? What's the
blessed
verse
are, this is Matthew 5, verse 11. It's in something called the Beatitudes. And prior to this, Jesus was describing eight qualities that you could find in all of his citizens, in all citizens of his kingdom. They're all peacemakers. They are all poor in spirit. He says, blessed are you when others revile you, persecute you, utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. All right, so my first question for you is this an expectation that Jesus has of all of his followers? In other words, if you were to follow Jesus and live whatever Christian life construct might be, if you're a member of his kingdom, is this something that's expected? Is this expected of all followers of his kingdom? Because it sounds kind of negative. But is that just a base level expectation that he has? Second question. Even though Jesus gives three pretty good descriptions of what this persecution might look like, how would you describe it like playing out in modern life? Is this someone standing on a street corner that everyone looks at like they're annoying? Or someone who gets into flame wars online type of a deal? Or is this someone who gets into arguments over doctrinal matters? Is that the type of persecution that he's talking about? And then lastly, is this something that we should therefore seek out? Or is this just a different response to something that the world would otherwise say is a very negative thing? So those are my three questions about this. Is it a base level expectation? What might this persecution look like? And is it something that we should wholeheartedly seek out?
I'm ready.
All
right. I'm ready for my
answer. Go, Mike.
All right, Mike, go ahead.
I think, yes, it is a base level expectation.
All right.
What it does not say at the tail end of that verse is every day and every minute.
Hey, Boova's phoning.
Boova.
He's using the phone.
He's going to phone a friend.
I'm going to the Bible.
Hey.
Matthew 5, 11.
Two thumbs.
Yeah.
He was creating my Warcraft. Whatever.
King of Clans, McBoova.
Once again, on my Bible. Go ahead.
Okay, Mike. So yes, I think it is a base level expectation, but I think it's a base level result, not a base level expectation.
Okay.
I think it happens because you are promoting the kingdom of God in a kingdom that is not his on earth, then you will elicit that result. Now, what it doesn't say is that's going to happen to you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you should expect that will happen to you by some. But like, if I don't think you're expected to go out looking for it, purposely causing non-peaceable behavior, because now you're fighting with James. James does not say to do that. It says to find peace with people and mm-hmm. Explain the kingdom of God. But like, if you're not being persecuted Sunday at 5, doesn't mean at 5:10 you need to start knocking on doors looking to rattle some cages. And the third question was, what do I think that looks like?
No, the second was, what do you think it looks like? The third is, should we seek it out? So the second is, what tangibly does this look like?
I think in general people might think you to be a fool and say so. And I've been called as much, for mm-hmm. my foolish, beliefs in Christ. And sometimes for your motives, like even on a day-to-day basis, like there's certain jobs that you will not get.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain promotions that won't come your way. There's certain maybe stature within a governmental structure that inherently has a bit of corruption in it that you probably will not get based on the way that you operate in the kingdom of God. So I would expect those inherent ones. And, I'd expect people to cast you aside sometimes because of your belief and not take you or your ideas seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you'll get outright yelling. You might, but it seems very unlikely.
In fact, I read something on there's on a website today that was giving you tips on how to remove religious references from your resume to make sure that you don't get singled out or basically not chosen for a job because of the references that you put on there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's obviously illegal to use that as a justification, but usually if they're weeding you out by that, they're certainly not going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I see that you're a deacon somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not hiring you because you were a deacon. Like, they're just not going to say that, but it doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
Right.
However, I think it depends where you're at. It depends what in what society you're in, what part of the world you're in, right? Because like being reviled in the United States with the infrastructure that we have is much different than being reviled in, you know, Sudan or Iraq, you know, if you're for being a Christian. And so some of it depends on the society that, that surrounds you. Yeah, on what that looks like. It may be, it is a very, it is not near the same reaction here. You might, someone might yell at you. Someone might, you know, every once in a while, someone might shoot a guy or like attack a church or something. But that is way more consistent when you are head on with another kingdom, in especially in other parts of the world, where like at least, and I think this is kind of part of what it's getting at, is if you're living a life that follows Christ and you're getting sort of these reactions, it means that they're understanding what you're saying and understanding what you're doing, right? Because like it is a threat. It is to say that God's kingdom is the kingdom that reigns.
Is the reverse true then? Like if you're not getting a whole lot of kickback in your life, would, I mean, could you effectively say that maybe you're not explaining the gospel correctly, or your life is not telling a full gospel?
So I think it depends where you're at. America is a very unique perspective because it is a head-on clash, the kingdom of God up against, say, even a capitalist modern society. They just don't realize they're being clashed against. Like, they miss the inconsistency. Much of our society doesn't realize that there's a kingdom saying this one will not last. Jesus brings another, and we're like, yeah, no, that seems exactly like what we're doing, and it's not. But I think part of that happens from America's perspective. We simply don't know the difference. We don't understand how some of what Jesus is bringing doesn't align up with what we feel like we've brought. So I think it it's difficult. I think from a Western culture perspective, specifically in America. Because a lot of times I'm not sure that we understand the places in which we are potentially in disagreement with Christ's kingdom.
I'm a little reserved on that just because I've seen it more from an outsider's perspective living outside this culture and its values. And there's a lot of places where I can see the clash. It's just a lot of the representation of Christ is from people within this culture. And a lot of times it's just embraced. Things like this culture fundamentally values humanism. That's defining good based on human standards instead of centered around God. So if your definition of good and evil comes from God instead of what's the base level human equation, how many people are helped and served by this, that's a human approach to it. And so they seem like they're very similar, but you're basically switching the first and second commandment. And our culture loves to do that. We love to go out and help that. There's a lot of ways that we can fulfill what Jesus commanded us to do, and it looks great. Going out and serving and loving the poor, that's great. As we're obeying him, it very much resonates with the humanistic way. But then there's also ways of valuing right and wrong, good and evil from just God's perspective instead of from human equations. And when we start pulling those sorts of things out, that's when we really clash with this culture.
But I guess maybe that's what I'm saying is I'm not sure that we know the difference, right? Because we do things like that. Like we'll say God says to feed the poor, we feed the poor.
Yeah, and that's where we're in agreement with the, with our culture around us.
Right.
It's the places that we clash is those are harder for us to find.
So most of your, but most of the United States, as an example, claims to be a Christian. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I think we don't. Sometimes we do not know the difference. We just simply don't know. We would look out and say our kingdoms aren't clashing. I don't think that's accurate. But I think that is when it comes to answer the question: should you be concerned that you are not facing, you people aren't reviling you openly, and you're not running into this? Are you? Does it mean that you're not doing what you're supposed to do for the kingdom? I guess that's where I'm willing to say not necessarily. Because I don't think a lot of the time that they recognize that there's a disagreement, that Christ's kingdom is representing something different. They've accepted something either that's untrue about Christ's kingdom or that is untrue about themselves, that they're not admitting cleanly, and so don't necessarily notice the difference. And maybe that's too much of a pass, but I feel like that is part of the case where like you could do the exact same things you're doing here and drop yourself on the streets of Tehran or in China somewhere, and like you have big problems, and you could do it here. To people that believe, you know, in effect, the same thing as those other two places, but you wouldn't run into the near the same problem.
Right.
So maybe that's what I'm getting at. Did you find it, Bova?
No.
Did you win?
What were you looking for?
Well, I'm not great at calling up scripture, but isn't there something that says that Jesus tells his disciples that you will suffer in my name?
Well, there.
That's it.
This is one. Luke 6, he also says, blessed are you when people using similar rhetoric on account of the Son of Man.
Anything outside of the Beatitudes?
Yeah, when he sends out the disciples to promote the kingdom and announce that it is here, he says, when you stand before governors and authorities, I forget what all he describes there, but that would be in Matthew chapter 10.
Okay.
So you can find it there. And then also 2 Timothy says, all who wish to live a godly life will be persecuted.
Okay. So from those, that's ultimately what I was going through Matthew trying to find that. I think I started at the end and didn't start at the beginning.
Okay.
But isn't that telling us that we should expect this? I mean, that in and of itself answers the question of, is this something that we should reasonably expect being believers in Christ?
Mm-hmm.
That this persecution that's talked about, blessed are those who are reviled. Mm-hmm. We should expect that, especially if we are ones who carry Jesus' name to other people, whether it be domestic, whether it be foreign. We should expect that. Now, maybe not specifically on the same level as if I were to go to Sudan or if I were to go to a different country. I wouldn't expect the same amount of persecution or the same kind of persecution as I would here, but I should still expect it in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that answers the first question.
At least, they write Xmas.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be a small form of persecution, Ben.
When they write Xmas? Yeah, exactly. When someone says to me, I can't celebrate Christmas.
They say, Happy Holidays.
Happy Holidays.
What?
I think I would go much further than that for the word persecution. That may be an inconvenience or a nuisance, or just you need to leave it alone and let them say Xmas.
Or a legitimate, shortening of the word. Go ahead.
Yeah.
So what does it look like to you, Bubba?
So I think it depends on where you're at, because, there's definitely something to be said for the situation that you're in, what kind of persecution that's going to be. Now, am I going to walk out of these doors and someone is going to have heard that I believe in Jesus Christ being my Savior and the Son of the Living God, and I'm going to get shot outside of the studio? I don't think so.
It's possible, but not likely.
It's possible, but not likely.
Yeah.
Whereas if I were in a country that is banned any talk about Jesus, any speaking about the relationship we have with God, reasonably I can say if I just convened with a couple of believers myself, I could walk out of the doors that I'm in right now and I could easily get shot, or I could easily be imprisoned, or easily be told that, you need to go against the God that you say you believe in, or you'll be murdered on the spot, or imprisoned for the rest of your life, or beaten senselessly, anything like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't that follow Ben's standard line of thinking, though, is like, aren't those countries that the countries that understand the gospel correctly? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, those are the countries that understand the power behind the living God, and they say, not in this town.
Yeah, there's a lot of the countries out there that they're like, you know, it's okay for you guys to gather together, worship, but just keep it to yourselves once you're out the door.
Yeah.
It's the sharing of your faith outside the door. That's where they draw the line, and they say, we catch you doing anything even close to that. You're jail, extradited,
like,
whatever.
Yeah, what was we shared that on the Twitter. Like, it was just such a deal when, like, those kids – in the past week, and they were threatened to say renounce Christ, and they were young kids, and they were like, we love Yeshua, and we've always loved Yeshua, mm-hmm. and then they were beheaded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what, like 8 or 9 year old kids, whatever it was, and like, that is a blade to the next situation, right? Like, mm-hmm. what is it you believe? What do you proclaim? And no one's likely to do that to me here.
Right. And, you know, I don't believe that all of us, to kind of go into the third question of, I don't believe that all of us are called to be in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are plenty of us that are called to be here in a country where we aren't going to get beheaded for believing in Jesus, and we aren't going to get shot, or other countries where it's not something that's so taboo that it leads to murder or imprisonment. So I think that it's not necessarily we should seek that out. Mm-hmm. What you should seek out is where God wants you. If you're that person that is expected to be in that war-torn country or in that place that does not tolerate the relationship that we have with God and with Christ, if that's what your calling is, guess what? That's where you go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you should expect. If I wholeheartedly believe that God is calling me to any country, I mean, X country, when it comes to a place that I could very easily be murdered or imprisoned there, then, you know, I'm going to go there. And it doesn't have to do with situationally whether or not God's calling me to it. If God's calling me to go down the road and talk to someone here in Johnston, then I'm going to do it. And it doesn't matter where it's at, and it's not the persecution I should be looking for. It's the fact that what I should be doing is sharing the gospel of Jesus and sharing his name and sharing who he is and his mercy and his grace and his love to all of the people that exist. And whether or not that means I get killed or whether or not that means that I get, you know, yelled at.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
And it describes it in the description of the martyrdom of Polycarp in the second century. Like, one of the things they, at the start of that account, is a rebuke of a guy who was, like, asking for it. And he said, you know, he's not calling you to do that. He's calling you to go about the Lord's business, and it's the consequences that he's not asking you to worry about. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you do what I tell you to do, you might lose a head, you might live forever. Like, well, you know, live a human life without, you'll live forever anyway.
Let's go ahead.
You know what I'm saying? But, like, I could be, again, I could be doing the same thing here as somebody else in a place where Christian physical persecution is very likely, and both are being done in obedience. I would never run if I felt like God was calling me to say, I'm sending you to China to boldly proclaim your faith and you'll die there. I should do that. And if he sends a Chinaman who otherwise would be, you know, imprisoned for doing that there, and he says, I want you to go to the United States and go to Boston and proclaim faith there, then he should do that, even though he's not facing the same consequences. That's not a matter of bravery, or it's just a simple matter of obedience. You do what God tells you to do where he tells you to do it. And that's there's no reason to feel guilty about being here and saying, I really wish I could go somewhere else and die. If God's not telling you to do that, don't be a fool, because that's dumb.
Right.
And so, like, I think that's the deal, is in the situation he was, the Sermon on the Mount, that's to the disciples. He very well knew how they were going to die. He was telling them what was going to happen. It very well did happen. And that was their circumstance. It was largely true. And so I think we are, we to accept whatever the consequences are in our obedience, regardless of where they're at and regardless of the circumstances that surround it, trusting that God will be God and he'll do what he wants. So I think that's the right reaction, is the consequences, just like the ends, are not ours to contemplate. The means, and our means, are faithfulness, and then God will do what he wants.
Agreed.
All right. Satisfied here?
Yeah, absolutely.
I like that. actually, so I remember I did something at the Bible camp at one point, and we kind of talked about this a little bit, I had no part in where I was born. I had no part in saying that I get to do the things that I do in the United States and face a different outcome than someone doing the same thing in a country that is more hostile to Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it is not mine to pine to go somewhere else to be persecuted, nor for me to pray for that those who are being persecuted escape it. Mine is to say, to where and to what end are we to obedient to God? And then let those consequences fall where they are, and that's largely what you see out of the underground church in China, is that they're not asking to be the persecution taken away. They're asking for stronger backs to bear it, and saying, this is what God has for us, and his kingdom is growing here, and we will continue to persist, when we're more likely to tap out and say, God, please take this from me. And so, like, it does help your perspective, I think, to understand what faith looks like. If you don't get it, and subscribing to that Voice of the Martyrs is a good reminder.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder to you can read this wrong. You can read it like a soap opera, and that's wrong. Mm-hmm. It is people that are doing what you do for Jesus, and they have different consequences. Mm-hmm. And it reminds you the work that's going on, and people that need your prayer, and there's ways that you can support those folks. And it's good. There's probably a point in my life, probably 2 or 3 years ago, where I thought, Voice of the Martyrs, like, this just seems like a it's a very graphic way to do things, right? Like, it's just a way to share stories like, oh, that guy, like, everybody's getting killed. People are getting beheaded. People are getting shot in front of their family. Like, it's the most horrific stories. But they're true stories. They're true stories of people facing persecution for Jesus. And it's not only a reminder that says, hey, I want you to remember people dying for this. It's a reminder that's what you're doing looks like. If I simply took your life and moved you to where these guys live, that was going to happen to you. And that's a reality that I think we have to face. And it does help put some of these things in the Bible into right perspective, because we are surrounded in a culture where we don't see the same thing. The truth is not relative. The things that Jesus is saying are still happening. Mm-hmm. And so we got to be careful not to get lost and recognize that my brother in Jesus somewhere got beheaded yesterday because he loves Jesus. That's my brother. That's a guy. We share the same dad. And Jesus sacrificed the same for that guy. And that's my family. And my family's getting hurt. And I would pray for my family anywhere. And it's just, it's an eye opener. And it's not, again, it's not meant to gross you out or creep you out. It's just a reality. It's how your brothers and sisters are living. And I think we need to recognize that. Because I think we understand the Bible better. We understand God's story better when we recognize all the pieces that he has playing in it. All right. All right. Mike, people need help in the world.
Here's the deal, Ben. I'm going to ask you a quick sidebar because they're asking about Santa.
Who's asking about the Santa?
The Dear Life from the Path is asking about Santa.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. Dear Life from the Path, I've decided that when I have kids, I don't want to do the whole Santa thing. I'd rather tell them about the real St. Nicholas and what it means to give rather than to receive. Even though I am not religious, I'll tell them about the birth of Jesus, even though he wasn't born in December, and tell them about the winter solstice. After working years of retail, I've seen firsthand what people can be like around the holidays, especially parents buying expensive, high-demand, low-supply things for their kids, and parents who put themselves in debt to make their kids happy.
Yep.
I am saddened by stories of kids writing to Santa and asking him to get their unemployed parents money for food. Most people I have spoken with disagree with my decision. They call me a Scrooge or say I'm taking away my kids' innocence. What do you think? Do you think I'm awful for wanting to teach them about charitable Saint Nick instead of commercializing Santa Claus?
No.
Nope.
I'm completely in line with this guy. Although I haven't gone into the historical Saint Nick. I mean, my daughter's got a Buzz Lightyear doll, and she thinks of Santa Claus in the same type of vein of being a more or less fictitious story about someone dropping down your chimney and delivering presents that way. She, you know, that caricature of Santa Claus, obviously that's not real. There was a historical background of this guy, Saint Nick, that's true, but at best there's a loose connection between the modern day Santa Claus and that Saint Nicholas. So yeah, I'd leave it as a fictitious story, and she understands what fiction means.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with being like, hey man, here's an interesting story they tell around this time of year. Check this out. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Like, we talked about, we have books that have Santa Claus in it at my house. Mm-hmm. I'm not like, I don't have to hide that from them. We're like, hey, here's a story of Santa. Here's how the story goes. Here's the name of the reindeer. This is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's a story. I didn't see the innocence die out of my kid's face, because it's weird to think that I'm protecting their innocence by lying to them, by perpetuating a story, make sure I'm hiding it. No, I mean, I get it. The lie's a loaded word. But like, I think it's fine. Mm-hmm. I think it's fine. It's not Scrooge-like behavior. You're dealing in reality, but it's not like I won't ever say anything about Santa Claus, right? Mm-hmm. It's just know it for what it is. It's a fun story, and we read fun stories.
I think there's a way to have Santa as part of your Christmas without giving him Christ-like powers. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. like if your kids are writing to Santa for your dad, for the dad to get a job or food for the table, right? Like, you've not explained Jesus correctly at your house, right? Like, and maybe I should say this, maybe I shouldn't, but like, our kids think, well, I'm pretty sure they're onto it by now, but like, they have an odd perspective of Santa that I haven't handled it. I just don't know what to say to them, right? They think that Santa works for Jesus in some capacity, and like, and like, they don't. They say enough things that you know, I think they know the gist of, they know it's not the deal, you know, but like, they really enjoy the story, and so they play into it, you know, but like, they don't pray to Santa, you know what I'm saying? Like, they know who God is, they know what God does, and they know that if you put Santa up against Jesus, you know that Jesus is the deal, right? And so like, I think there's a way, like, you know, if your tradition growing up was having Santa in your home and you loved it and it spawned great memories, I don't know that I'm going to throw a gauntlet down and say you can't have that. But like, your world always looks correctly when you're looking through the correct perspective. And if Christ is the head of your house, as it should be, like, all those other things will just kind of take care of themselves. I think it's probably fine. I agree. I don't know that I would. But really what you're saying is even the commercialized version of Santa are just people acting poorly. You know what I'm saying? The parents buying high-end, low-supply, you know, acting like a bunch of jerks.
That's true. That's not a Santa problem, right?
No,
that's a people problem.
Yeah. These are greedy people. Like, I mean, you call it what it is. Like, why don't you teach your kids that greed is wrong? And then tell them why that Jesus says not to worship money. And then Santa can just be a fat, jolly man that may or may not work for Jesus, and he'll go away by the time they're nine. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's fine.
Yeah, as a parent, you have the ability to decide what's really special to the kids by the way that you react and the way that you're drawing things up. And so you can either draw up in their minds how special it is to receive gifts or how special it is to give. And so depending on, as a parent, you get to choose. You can frame those two things. So you can make it look like one is more valuable than the other. It's your choice.
Yeah,
agreed.
Okay, you want to get secular's advice here?
Yeah.
Okay, secular says, "Dear Santalus, I agree you should talk to your children about the birth of Jesus, as well as the pagan festivals that Christmas replaced, if you wish. While you're at it, also stress to them that what the spirit of Christmas is supposed to be, even if it seems somewhat lost in the commercialism of the holiday. However, wait until your children ask you about Santa. When they do, tell them the truth. That way they will learn that when they ask their mother something, they will always be given an honest answer." Mm-hmm. Yeah, that doesn't seem too bad.
Yeah. Booba's got some, he needs some advice. Go ahead, Booba.
Hey, man, I don't appreciate you calling me straight out. I was going to make it seem like a deer lying from the path.
Booba needs some advice.
I do need some advice, fellas.
So there's a really handsome guy. We'll call him Tuva.
So there's this really nice-looking man. His name is Santa. So I had a run-in at a local store where I went in to buy myself an alarm clock. Really loud, super loud, like dinner bell alarm clock, right? And I picked this thing up, and it says touch for a light. And I used to have one that it was a plastic cover, and you pressed it, and it was like a pop that you would hear, and a light would come on. It was I liked it. So you middle of the night, you could pop it, show the time. So I grabbed this alarm clock, and I pressed on it, and it wasn't seeing a light. So I pressed a little bit harder, and I wasn't seeing a light. And I pressed a little harder, and I crushed the alarm clock in my hands. I broke the glass. And then the glass gave way of the structural integrity of the outside, and I crushed in the metal. It was crushed. So, I took it up, and I grabbed a second one. I took it up to a cashier, and I said, "Hey, I have two of these. One of them is broken. It was my fault, though. I broke this thing. I would like to buy it because I broke two, or I broke one of them, so I'm going to be buying two." And the gal says, "Okay, well, I appreciate that." I said, "I didn't want to just put it back and say, oh, well, now it's broken. Someone's going to grab one. Possibly cut themselves in the glass." So I was going to pay for it, and there was a group of people behind me in the line that were obviously waiting to pay, and someone pipes up and says, "No, he shouldn't have to pay for that alarm clock." And I looked at the gal and I said, I understand where you're coming from, but I broke it myself. It was an accident, but I did it, and I'd like to own up to that and pay for this." And it was a back and forth between me and her, and the cashier kept agreeing with me and then agreeing with the person. And finally, the cashier seemed like she didn't want to be confrontational with anyone else, so she grabbed it and says, "Don't worry about it," and then sets it off to the side. My reaction was, "No, I need to worry about it. I broke it, and I need to pay for this. That's my fault, and I need to pay for it." And there was some argument going on. Eventually, I ended up paying double for a thing of batteries that I had, because I felt a little bit better about that. I'm just like, well, I broke something with the companies, and I feel like she's not going to let me pay for the alarm clock, so just ring the batteries twice, whatever. I'll pay towards it. I'll feel a little bit better about that. I was trying to be integrous with that because of the fact that I broke an alarm clock and I wanted to pay for it. What I'm trying to figure out is, did I really need to pay for that alarm clock? Or when the gal said to me, the cashier said, "No, don't worry about it, put it aside," was that me kind of fighting a benevolence that she was giving me? She was being nice to me and saying, "Hey, don't worry about it. I represent the company and you don't need to pay for this." And I just pushed it too far and refused a gift, if you will. Am I in the wrong? Am I in the right?
I think once the cashier said, "We're clear," that was it. That should have been the end of the matter. The debt was taken care of. I mean, the fact that you're willing to go up and take responsibility for what you did, even though it was apparently a cheap piece of plastic. I think the amount that it costs your wallet is not as much as what the company loses in terms of their reputation.
Okay.
Putting out this kind of cheap product. So
So I was being a schmuck for trying to fight it.
No.
After the cashier gave you a clear, I think you're a schmuck after that point.
Yes. After as it like once the deal is done and she said don't worry about it, saying I want to try to make this right by having you double charge me for the batteries, like
no, that was stupid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think, a little far.
No, so, but hold on, just a second. You were right in attempting to pay for it. Mm-hmm. I think that was a solid move.
Yeah,
That woman does not represent the company. That'd be like the maid telling me I can have the 13th century Voss.
Yeah, that is the exact same
example.
It
is the exact. She's not the owner of the company. She doesn't even manage the store. She's just someone that works there that wants to put this under the rug.
Right.
That's like that's like the janitor told me I can have a chalkboard. It's not his to give away.
But she ultimately took responsibility for it as the cashier.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm going to hide this. No
right. I don't
deal.
Think she ever went to her bosses and said, hey, by the way, boss, I covered this blank amount of money alarm clock. That's why I felt like I still should pay for it, even though she said it's okay.
I feel like
she has the power to say it's
I
okay.
I would move on then, to saying, double charge the batteries is stupid. But like trying to pay full price and then she's like, no, it says, look, you're swiping my card for double the amount of sit.
All right, but if you didn't feel that the cashier had the authority to give you the pass, then it's customer service is where you want to go.
I don't want to take much of time, man.
I'm sorry. So your prudence is limited by your willingness to make a phone call?
No, I would much rather just deal with it at that situation.
She doesn't want to deal with it. She says it's fine.
I felt as though the cashier was just going, whatever, because of the peanut gallery that was sitting there going, no, charge him for that.
Hold on a minute. You stepped into the mud here. So your integrity is limited to the spot. Like, why don't you just call right now? Why don't you just call up corporate Walgreens or whatever and say, hey, this woman didn't double charge me like I insisted. I want you to take my information over the line. And if they refuse, you book a plane and you go to the headquarters and you write them a check. Where does your integrity stop,
Booba? I feel okay with the double charge.
The cashier has some level of authority in this situation.
No, I don't think that's true at all.
She handles all the money.
She swipes or doesn't swipe merchandise as it goes through.
Uh-huh.
She has authority, some kind of level of trust with the corporation. Now, if she uses it inappropriately, that's on her head. But she has some level of authority to deal with customers.
Okay.
Like, for example, if one customer is jamming up the line and making it so that the company is losing profit because everyone's just standing there waiting, you know, they're losing dollars per second, which is how retails work. So, you know, they have at least a little bit of judgment that they can express there.
So here's my secondary question then. Was I being a prideful beast?
Eric, yes.
Man.
I'm agreeing with you.
I appreciate that. I do. I'm trying as hard as I can not to be.
No, you're talking to the maid. Dang it. You write him a check for double the amount and sit and leave.
Okay, so
that's
batteries.
The way
so you agree with the premise, not the double charge of the batteries.
That was stupid. That was completely irrelevant.
All right, so hold on. Okay. Follow Booba's example, though. She says, no, it's fine. I don't want to charge it.
No, it's not fine. Do it.
But she refuses. Then what are you going to do?
She pretty much refused.
What is the length of your integrity?
I'm going to talk to your manager. If the manager says, look, we're just going to let this one slide, then I would let it go.
So this is based upon your unknowing premise as to whether she has the ability to do that or not.
It is my years of experience in workplaces.
In Walgreens retail.
That would tell me who has accountability in this place. And I don't think it's the cashier.
No, I don't get that at all.
Yeah, I'd settle it with the manager.
So in
let me speak to your manager. I wish to be
double charged. No, I would politely pay. I would walk out of line, and then I would go find the manager. It's not like I'd sit there and make a scene about it or kick people or
what
I'm saying. You just say okay if that's what you want, and then go find the manager and tell him the deal and say, look, I really want to pay for this. Please, just let me do this.
If that's your belief, then why would you even go to the retail cashier in the first place?
Yeah, Booba.
Go rat yourself out to the manager directly.
My solution was
them double charging me.
I would assume they would have just swiped them both. You know what? It'd be better if you didn't even tell them it was broke. Say, look, charge. I want to buy both of these.
as she grabs a shattered and crushed.
She says one of them is broke, and you say, yeah, that's fine. Ring it up.
She's going to say, I'm not going to sell this to you.
What? Why would she not sell it to me?
Because it's now in a shattered state.
I want to buy the one with the shattered
state. The company's liable for it.
I think I can assume that the cashier would have seen it and then gone, no, I'm not selling this to you.
Well, exactly.
No.
Okay, so.
You couple of boobs.
You would stop me if I insisted upon buying a broken item.
Yes.
You would physically stop me and say, I refuse to sell you this. And I say, but I want a broken one. You say, I don't care what you want. You will have this one that you don't want.
That is correct.
That's outrageous.
Yes.
Hi, I'm not going to sell you the shards of glass.
I want the shards of glass.
No.
I want to buy it.
Then you buy a sheet of glass and you break it at your home.
I broke it at your home.
You go grab another alarm clock. Buy it completely pristine, take it home, and crush it yourself.
Yes. Here's what I expect to happen,
like
Mike Foost. I expect you to walk into the Hy-Vee. I expect you pick up a bottle of wine, break it,
crush it.
on the edge of the meat counter,
take
the shard of the wine bottle and say, I wish to buy this. And I refuse to leave until you run my car.
Full price.
You've set up a situation for me to be a felon, and I do not appreciate it.
Booba, at this point, is trying to buy a weapon.
I'd like to buy this crushed alarm clock. It wasn't crushed 3 minutes ago. I just like the way it looks.
What's the
now.
Same example if you walk through the store and you grab a handful of grapes, eat the grapes, and then walk up and say, hey, I ate like 10 grapes. I need you to charge me for these. I don't worry about it. Is that fine?
If they say don't worry about it?
Yeah.
They have some level of authority with the store.
This is the exact advice you gave on the reconciliation at the Walmart. Go to the customer service. If they say they don't want to worry about it, then you let it go because they have the authority.
No, I said if it was John's Local Hardware and you talk to John, then you're fine. If you just talk to the guy who runs customer service, that's not good enough. That's what I said.
That is not what you said.
So I need the store manager to tell me the alarm clock's okay. Okay, so breaking it all down.
You've done it wrong, Booba.
From the perspective, I did it wrong. I'm a prideful beast.
Yes.
I was correct in trying to assume responsibility and ownership of the fact that it was broken. I need to take care of it.
We all agree on that.
At the time that the cat or the person who worked there said, hey, don't worry about this, and set it aside, I should have respected the authority that they might or might not have in saying that it was okay for me to walk away with that product, and I was done and completely taken care of my responsibility.
That is my inherent position, yes.
You sold your integrity to laziness and peer pressure.
And Mike says my solution of I don't want to take a long time and I don't want to deal with managers, I just want to get this over with, of just double charge the batteries.
Yeah, I will work stupid. At one sentence to try to rebut, and then I guess it's fine. I'm not going to worry about
now,
it.
Now, here's what I don't understand, Mike. It's like, why accept the store managers? He's not the regional guy. He's not the owner of the company.
I need to talk to Sam Walton.
Because he's held directly responsible for the books at the store. He's held directly responsible for how his store does and how it performs.
So is every
cashier is responsible for their cash register.
Yeah,
professionally, yeah, he's held responsible, but it doesn't change his pocket.
Yeah,
other than potentially a bonus.
The only guy
enough.
He has the level of authority of the store. He's the authority man or authority lady.
But he's not the owner of the store.
So according to Mike, I need to go talk to the store manager, and that's it.
Mike has a reference card of store hierarchy in which he's willing to accept information from.
Yes. Responsibility happens from the top, and that's it.
Yes. When you go through the Walmart and the cash register don't work right, they call over manager to put in a manager code, right? There's obviously a hierarchical inside of this establishment.
How do you know
that? So that's the qualifying piece is I look for a manager code.
Somebody that does that is in higher regard than that
madam,
person.
Sir or madam, do you have a manager code?
Give me
well,
the
yes,
highest
I
level
do.
In here that
I
can okay
I need your
this.
Permission.
Yes.
How do you know they don't have some sort of policy within the Walgreens to just handle items like that?
I don't.
And you just caused trouble for this young woman.
The woman didn't bring it up. If she'd have said, we have a policy to cover this, I'd have said, fine.
And you would have believed that because her integrity is to the stars. But
absolutely.
You refuse to let her say, don't worry about it.
Absolutely. She doesn't have the authority to say whether it's all right or not. Let me talk to Mr. and Mrs. Manager. I will make this right. You will not
all
sleep
right,
me.
All right, I'm Mike, a little confused at what I do going forward, but I think I have the premise.
Hold on. Based upon Mike's description, that should give you enough information to know whether you should listen to his advice.
Yeah, I think I'm done listening to Mike on this matter.
Mike, I think I'm going to listen to your advice up to a point.
How does this not make any sense? Seriously, it's like me stopping by the...
At
the
I agree at
the,
with these guys.
At the guy that takes the reservations at the restaurant, I say, look, I need a whole turkey for free. Yeah, that'll be fine. You don't make that decision here.
Okay, I agree. You have some weird reservations, though, or some weird qualifiers of who I can talk to.
Yeah.
Give me the guy in charge. That's who I want to talk
She's
to.
She's in charge of the register.
Okay, fine. If you want to
the
take
janitor's
that to
in charge of sweeping the floors.
If we want to take that to the next
that
level.
I can get free stuff.
At what level of management should I accept, yes, you can go there?
I'd
because
say
there's
that,
like four levels of management
I'd
at
say
a
the man
retail
with
store.
It says manager.
Anyone that says manager, whether that be department manager, floor manager, manager of anything, manager of
sure.
Shipments.
Yes.
If your name says
not the
manager
cashier.
In your title, I accept what you're saying.
Yeah. Unless
what if it's a senior? What if it's a senior cashier?
What do you mean?
They've been entrusted with responsibility above other cashiers.
Now, everyone knows that's a phony title.
So the word senior, totally
they just
not
didn't
okay.
want to give you a raise.
Manager,
they printed
absolutely.
Up a name tag. Everybody
no,
knows that.
No, senior just means that you get more stuff dumped on you.
Yeah. That's a valid point.
For less pay.
I'll agree with that statement.
I think I'd talk to the manager.
All right. So going forward. Still accept responsibility. Still try and accept responsibility up to a point.
Yeah.
And if I'm absolved by anyone in the company, whatever.
Let me ask this question, Mike. Here's the hypothetical scenario. You go. I'm trying to figure out where this lands. You go to the subway as an example.
I'm at the subway. Yes.
You get your.
Sometimes there's subways and Walmarts.
You fill your. You've legitimately purchased a soda.
Yeah.
You fill it up with root beer, caffeine-free root beer. You go to take a drink. You miss your mouth. You spill half of it onto the floor.
Uh-huh.
You go up to the counter and you say, hey, man, can I get some rags? I spilled everywhere. They said, nah, don't worry about it. You say, no, that's okay. Give me some rags. Give me the mop or whatever. I'll clean this up. And they say, no, we'll take care of it. Do you demand the mop or to speak with the manager to clean up your mess?
Give me the mop, woman.
No.
Give me the mop.
Why not?
So as long as there's physical and labor involved, you're not okay with
it. I don't understand the difference between my example and Booba's example.
Because it's part of their job. Now, if I drop the soda onto a candy machine and it shorted out the circuits, and the guy said, don't worry about it, it's no big deal, then that would be a different conversation.
Well, it cost him money to send the labor to get
it. Now he's already paying him. The guy's got to work just as hard for $7 an hour, doesn't matter what happens.
No, he could be doing something else and not mopping the floor. You caused extra trouble.
Yeah, but he's still getting paid the same. He's not costing the company any money.
Yeah, it is.
No. You'll have to work longer, it's or it's someone else will have to work because
we're dealing
work.
In the company's economy, not the person's economy, right? That's the difference, is because the company cares whether you take that alarm clock and give it away. The guy doesn't. The guy's not in the business of giving or not giving away alarm clocks. And he gets paid the exact same amount, doesn't matter what happens to that alarm clock.
Neither does the manager.
The store, on the other hand, makes or loses money. Commission man makes or loses money depending on how the store does.
I said the Subway makes or loses money on the employee costs. They got out of their 10
minutes. Which are static. They don't change whether I dropped a soda or not.
Listen here, they got out of there 10 minutes later because this guy had to clean up your stuff because you didn't insist on getting the mop.
I ordered a medium soda, and I don't believe that I sprayed it around the joint like a fountain.
That's what you did.
10 minutes later, closing the shop up.
Even if it's 30
like
seconds
I gave
more.
It to an elephant, yeah. And he poofed it around.
Fine, it's 3 minutes more.
Even
whatever.
If it's 15 seconds more, it's more time that someone is on the payroll because you have created a different mess that they're going to clean up.
No, you've made
a
mountain out of a molehill.
Okay, so let's say that there's a table that needs to be cleaned in the back, okay?
Sure.
And you drop soda. There's one cleaning dude on staff. He now has to wait to go clean the table because he has to go out and clean up your mess.
Got it.
That is more time on payroll because he has to go 15 seconds here, clean up here. That is 15 seconds that would have been taken away from the table cleaning. There is
so
more
total,
payroll that goes to that guy.
30 seconds.
It doesn't matter
on
how
payroll.
Much. It's not static. There's still more payroll being
You
set.
At least owe them the 30 seconds of payroll.
Yeah.
I will pay it.
Fight for that. Yeah, I'm sure.
I'd like to offer you another 67 cents, sir.
I'll give you 0.5 cents.
I did spill drinks
there
over there.
There is a scale, I suppose, where this matters.
Either give me the mop or quantify the labor into cleaning the product.
So that
I will do whichever.
Responsibility.
You're a fool.
You would take any opportunity to bail on your responsibility to pay for this alarm clock.
No, if I were to do that, I would have left the store without mentioning it.
Yeah.
If you say, hey, I'd like to pay for this, I'd say, nah, don't worry
about it.
So you'd
like the appearance of morality without the truth.
No, I would like someone else to decide whose responsibility is
someone whose responsibility it isn't to decide.
Clocks are expensive. People are free. Hey, love listen, Mike Foos.
You want to live a cheap life, you continue right ahead. I will find the manager.
You're outrageous.
Assume responsibility
all
to
right.
a point.
What's there is no secular advice.
Yeah, there was no secular
Unfortunately,
advice.
Unfortunately, you're just screwed.
You
Apparently,
did the wrong thing.
I need to go back to that store and say, hey, can I not be charged for these batteries?
Yeah, that was shifty.
Admittedly, that was weird. Okay, yes, it was.
Who offered up that solution?
I did.
He
you
did.
Dumb it.
It was the first thing I thought of because I didn't want to be confrontational anymore. I just want to get out of the flipping line. I'm just like, oh, well, okay, lady, calm down. Stop yelling at me and saying you're not paying for that, cashier. Stop feeling weird about her yelling at me. Just. I literally looked at her. I said, just double charge me for the batteries, and I'll feel good. She goes, okay, done.
Sweet. Pat me on the tush. Charge me for those batteries. Send me on my way.
Powder on the nose. Hey, thanks.
I feel better because what I did, maybe the battery thing was stupid. Thank you for your advice, gentlemen.
Yeah, no, it was stupid.
Next.
Department manager, Mike Foos. Not full store manager, but manager there.
Okay, here we go.
You'll give me a mop.
I cannot believe you would fault a man for trying to make sure the thing was done correctly.
Let me speak with your district manager.
I need to write into corporate.
Does he have a mop? Go ahead, Mike. The earlier you ask this question, the sooner I'll drop it.
Dear life from the path. Dear life from the path. Oh, no, I screwed it all up. Here we go.
Yeah. Dear life from the path.
Dear life from
Should
the
I
path.
Mop up my pop or not?
I made a small error at the Subway. It's ruined my life. My brother thinks I'm a sham. My friend won't listen to me. What do I do? Dear life from the path, my husband took up the guitar about 10 years ago. I thought it was a great idea at first and encouraged his interest. Within 2 years of his learning to play, I was expected to sit, listen to him, and never interrupt a song. Needless to say, his demands have not gone over very well with me. This is his hobby, not mine. He plays well, but can't sing a note. When he does, he sounds like a cat in heat, and he likes to perform like he's playing for a crowd. My peace and quiet at home are gone. He says I don't support him. What is your take on this? Yeah, you don't support him because he's not supportable.
I mean, that sounds more like a prison.
Yeah.
Like, are you being held against your will to listen to this man? Like, he's 2 years in, he says, sit, wife. I shall play for thee. Like, I don't get it.
You're going to listen to all of Inagata DeVito, and you're not going to say a word.
You're going
to
shut up.
13 minutes. You're going to listen to 13 sweet minutes of Iron Butterfly, and you're not saying anything.
Especially the 5-minute drum solo in the middle.
And I'll perform with my
on my
with
acoustic guitar. Bum, 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 bum.
Hey, guess what? Freebird's next.
Better sit down.
I'm taking requests from you, wife.
I think the support he's expecting is a little unreasonable.
Agreed.
Tell him as such and move on.
I'm so excited to learn what not to do with a husband. Take up instruments, make wife listen, or else.
Well, who is around this man? Hey, I want my wife to enjoy my guitar playing. You know what you should do? You should put her in the living room and say, shut your face while I play.
That will get her love and adoration directly.
Hey, that's crazy. I don't remember asking if you wanted to listen to me.
Although it's, okay, no, on the opposite side, to say, it's his hobby, not mine. Like, that's the nature of individual hobbies. So if my wife says, hey, I'm very interested in this, well, that seems like your problem, not mine. I'm watching TV.
She bought him the guitar, man.
No, I know, but like, it's just a weird way to phrase her problem. Like, it seems like she has a legitimate problem. I wouldn't have to word it in such a stern way, because I would never respond to my wife, whether if it's her hobby and I want to support her. Like, of course it's her hobby. We don't have to do it together for me to provide support. But yeah, he seems patently outrageous.
I think most husbands would settle for tolerance. If you tolerate my hobby without giving me a bunch of business, let me spend a little money on it every once in a while. I don't expect you to come in and sign the poster with me or you sit and listen to Inagata Vida like they suggest. But like, you know, if you would support me in the way that you would permit me to do this and not give me a bunch of hassle, I feel like that's just fine.
Yeah, I think that's generally true.
Mm-hmm. All right. Secular says, your husband wants praise and validation, and you should give it to him in the area where it's deserved, for having mastered the guitar. However, because his singing needs tweaking, be honest and tactfully suggest he find a vocal coach to help him in that area.
Oh, yeah, that'll work.
If he reacts defensively, be sure to mention that some of the finest singers in the world get coaching throughout their careers to avoid damaging their vocal cords.
Oh, what a passive and crappy way to deal with this.
Or you could just lay down at the front door and pretend to be a rug. People could just walk on you all the time.
Sweetheart, you sound like a toad. Let's get you singing lessons.
Yeah.
We'll be great.
I'll have you know that Placido Domingo also took lessons at a young age.
You have mastered the guitar. I know nothing of the guitar or how it's played, but it seems to me, sir, that you have mastered it. I don't want to listen to it anymore. That's terrible. That didn't make any sense at all. Hold on, there's a P.S. P.S. Perhaps you should encourage him to find other musicians to start a group. That way, he'll have an outlet for his talent, and you'll be free.
Hey, nothing sounds more, you know, hip, as a group of musicians hanging around, and some guy shows up and says, hey, my wife said I should find a group. Are you fellas available for jamming?
Hey, here's the deal. I used to play in a legit band, right? Ben and I used to play in a band. There's nothing that tells me that I don't want to hang out with you more than, hey, you should come over to my place and jam.
Yeah, we should. You want to jam? We'll get together and jam.
Hey, listen, man, I'm 32 years old with a wife, a kid, full-time job. I don't just show up places to doofus around for a couple hours. You know what I'm saying? Like, that don't sound like any fun at all. But you might want to find a cooler way, or maybe say you should go send him to a jam. Like, there's bars and stuff have jams. You say send him down there and try to make some buddies. But like, don't say, hey, you should get a group together. That's a good way to get beat up.
Hey, man, I'm never asking you guys to jam again.
Never do it.
I didn't realize you got such negative comments against me when I'm like, hey, man, want to come over and jam?
You should come over to my house and we'll jam. I'm like, no. Are you providing food? No.
Yeah. Hey.
Rude.
Get all your musical crap together, haul it into your small car, take it out of your small car, drag it into my basement where my mom or neighbor gets upset about it.
Get a pizza bag.
Let's jam for 45 minutes while you show me how you learned Come Together by the Beatles. And then I'll haul my crap back upstairs into my small car, back to my house where my wife is upset because I haven't been home. And then, yeah, we'll do that again sometime.
Yeah. How was your time with your friends? Ah, man. I wasted my only free time going to hang out with a guy just so I could watch him play the bongos.
Fine.
That's not fun at all.
Never jam with you guys again.
All right.
Yeah, I got tassels.
Hey, man. My wife says I'm an okay singer. Jerks.
All right, one more, Mike.
No.
What, you're out?
Hey, did you ever stop for a break?
No, we blew right past it.
All right.
I was going to say, I feel like it's been a while.
We're way past that.
Okay, here we go. It's from an eighth grade boy. This is right up our alley.
We might be able to handle this
one. Dear Life from the Path. I'm an eighth grade boy in junior high, And there's a girl I really like.
Oh, yeah.
My problem is I'm afraid to tell her I love her. I know she likes someone else and wants to go out with him, but I don't know if she likes me. When I'm home, I write her poems, and I want to drop them off at her locker, but I am scared to. We are in three classes together. Do you have any advice?
Troy, you want to field this one?
Ditch the friggin' poetry. I'm sorry. No eighth grade girl goes, oh, what a sweetheart. He made
yes,
me
they do.
No, they do not. Yes. Because I was that kid.
Yes.
Yo, they do. Poetry in eighth grade.
They don't like bad poetry.
Yeah, your
you
poetry
stinks. You
want to
know the only person that liked my poetry? The lunch lady. I'm not kidding. I can't
Did
make
you
that
give
up.
It to the lunch lady?
I showed the lunch lady. I said, hey, I want to give this to a gal in my grade. What do you think? She goes, that was beautiful. And then brought me a notebook the next day to write poetry into. That was lame. That was when I had no friends. You know when I had friends? When I ditched the poetry.
Hey, man.
That's creepy.
Maybe you're just
what
a,
y'all say?
Maybe you're a poor poet.
Whatever, man. My poetry was great.
Hit me with a few lines. Hit
I
me.
I was published.
No, hit me.
I don't know it off the top of my head. I got to sit down with a piece of paper.
That doesn't even rhyme. Your poetry stinks. No wonder you couldn't get any ladies.
Hey, man, it doesn't have to rhyme, all
right? He's right. You stink, boo.
That's why I gave it up.
That ain't going to get no ladies.
That's why I gave it up. Nothing about this dude that says, hey, man, my poetry's great. I'm going to write into Dear Life or the Path. I don't see this person being a great poet.
Listen, you're missing the wrong point here. Here's the thing. People get ladies with poetry, right?
Yeah.
Especially ladies that like them and like them in return.
Yeah, it helps if they already like you.
Yeah, I mean, if you're just some, you know, creepy beret-wearing dude that shows up with poetry, yeah, you're going to get
hey,
the
my
ass.
My striped shirt got me ladies, okay?
Yeah.
Here's the deal. When was the last time you guys were in eighth grade? Like 20 years ago? I get it. So eighth graders do not like poetry,
yeah,
and I don't care what any of you say. Ben, you were in eighth grade in 1914. I don't want to hear it.
I wrote it. Here's the deal. When I was in eighth grade, I wrote an anti-abortion screed called The Tripwire Womb. And ladies are attracted to that.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
I didn't even care at the time. It sounded edgy.
No.
And I read
ditch
it,
the poetry.
I actually read that 3 years ago. I thought, hey, man, that's pretty good.
Ditch the poetry. Don't tell her you love her. Just say, hey, I like you. Do you like me? Whatever. That's it.
That don't rhyme either.
Ditch the poetry.
How's he supposed to stand out from the pack? There's probably all kinds of dudes.
Find something else. Besides poetry.
What if he ain't no good at anything else?
Well, then unfortunately he's not going to get a girlfriend until 10th grade, okay? 10th grade, 11th grade girlfriends? Absolutely. Poetry, big deal.
No,
there are English classes that make
your
sense.
Your life experience is not everyone's life experience.
It should be.
Look, move up.
Everyone should have my life experience.
Here's the deal. How can you look at your life and say, I'm the everyman?
No, I should look at this and say, I'm this guy.
Here's the deal.
You broke an alarm clock by holding it in your hand.
Yeah.
You're not the everyman.
You
smash.
Exactly. You brutalized a retail item.
And then try to pay for it and then double swipe some batteries, okay?
These are not these are not the average Joe's problems.
Hey man, just because I accidentally crushed an alarm clock does not make me not qualified to tell this eighth grade dude to stop writing poetry.
Yeah. You and Gallagher have things in common.
Oh, look, a watermelon or an alarm clock.
I don't know what else to do.
Hey, I'm gonna crush your poetry. Seriously.
Hey man, keep writing the poetry.
No.
I would save it for a second date. I'd ask her out first before you would show it to her. That's what I would do.
Let me ask you out with this glorious sonnet. No! Weird. Ditch the poetry.
Just because you're jaded with it, because you're a terrible poet.
Hey man, I was a wonderful poet. I impressed a lunch lady. Do you realize how difficult it is to get affection from a lunch lady? I got doubles that whole year.
Here's the problem is your tack on this deal is like a low rent, terrible high school band tries for like a year and there's like the music industry cannot be broken into. It's an impossible endeavor. When it turns out that Van Halen seemed to pull it off. And you, sir, that's you. You're the crappy high school band that's like, poetry doesn't work.
Yeah. And you may have oversold it, too. Like, you may have tried to hit up Jennifer Aniston when you should have got the mom from All in the Family. Like, that was your...
So, my poetry did not elevate me high enough at a league to be able to ask the girls that I was asking out.
Yeah. You may have overshot.
You may have to develop your craft.
I went from a 6 to a 7,
you wanted Jennifer Lopez, you got Barbara Bush.
Okay. I may be a 3.
Dear Barbara.
My poetry may have made me a 5, 5.5, solid, all right? That does not mean that had anything to do with qualifying, like I did not go for a 7 or a 9 that is rude.
Songs that made the hit parade. Those were the days.
You were terrified. Even old.
Hey, what was the secular advice?
Here's secular advice.
It's poetry.
Actually, you're right. It didn't help using an All in the Family reference. Go ahead, Mike.
Secular says,
I have no idea what that is.
Secular says, yes, if you're smart, you'll wait until that girl is over her crush before declaring your feelings for her. The boy she has her eye on may or may not be interested in her, but as long as she is fixated on him, she won't be receptive to your romance. And it could be embarrassing if you say anything prematurely. The same goes for anonymously dropping off her literary efforts at her locker.
That would.
This is you, Boober, right here.
Guys like us, we had it made.
That sounds right.
Those were the days.
Sounds like some 20-year-old porn. I like it.
Who's?
That's my poetry right there.
Yep.
That is my poetry.
Who shows
song
up to the
form.
Lunch lady, Boober? Seriously.
Dude, I sat by myself at lunch.
At least
I had
a
no
guidance
friends.
Counselor or something.
You can ask anybody. I had no friends. None. My friends were the lunch ladies because they gave me doubles on chicken, okay? They were my friends.
I wore my T-shirt that said haiku is for you, and then no one would be
I
friends with me.
I sat by myself all of 7th and 8th grade when it came to lunch. I had lunch ladies to talk to and poetry to write. I was a sad, sad little boy or big boy, however you want to say it. Jerks.
All right, you're listening to Live from the Path.
Poetry's lame. 8th grade.
Here's the deal. Boova, we're going to do a social experiment. You and I are going to go to the local school and pick out an 8th grader.
And that is the creepiest phrase you've ever said to me in my entire life.
We're going to get a van. We're going to pick up a couple 8th graders.
We have a van.
And we're going to groom them. And then we're going to send them back out in the world
we're
and see what
see
happens.
See which 8th grader gets ladies. This is like a she's all that 8th grade boy version.
Yes.
Terrifying.
You've been listening to Life from the Path. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us. A big thanks. God bless Bob Eisenhower. You go to EisenhowerTeam.com. He's a good sport. And for all your home buying and selling needs, tis the season to purchase a house. And Bob can help you with that. Also, hey, maybe you don't know if you should be in the market. He can help you see what's out there. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Go to westfieldvethospital.com. You can set your appointment online or give him a call. Get your pet in there. Start the year off right by treating your pets right. Go to Westfield Vet Hospital. That's westfieldvethospital.com. You can catch us during the week at livefromthepath.org, including performances from last week with Matt Baer and the interview with Mary Wastey. We will see you next week. Thanks for listening to Live from the Path.